Following is a Sunday feast lecture given by His Holiness, Ravindra Suprabhu, from the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 11, Text 33, on December 23, 2001, in Philadelphia.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Chapter, the universal form, and this evening, text number 33. If you're new here, we put the text on the board transliterated from the Devanagari script into the English or the Roman alphabet with a few special diacritic marks. So the first thing we'll do is we'll chant this text because it's purifying. Chanted in Sanskrit. I'll say each word, sometimes a couple of words, you say after me, and then we'll do each line like Ashtapada responsibly. So Bhagavad Gita 11, translation. Therefore, get up, prepare to fight and win glory, conquer your enemies, and enjoy a flourishing kingdom. They are already put to death by my arrangement, and you, O Savyasachi, can be but an instrument in the fight. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Savyasachi refers to one who can shoot arrows very expertly in the field. Thus Arjuna is addressed as an expert warrior, capable of delivering arrows to kill his enemies. Just become an instrument, nimitta matram. This word is also very significant. The whole world is moving according to the plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Foolish people who do not have sufficient knowledge think that nature is moving without a plan, and all manifestations are but accidental formations. There are many so-called scientists who suggest that perhaps it was like this, or maybe like that. But there is no question of perhaps and maybe. There is a specific plan being carried out in this material world. What is that plan? This cosmic manifestation is a chance for the conditioned souls to go back to Godhead, back to home. As long as they have the domineering mentality, which makes them try to lord it over material nature, they are conditioned. But anyone who could understand the plan of the Supreme Lord and cultivate Krishna consciousness is most intelligent. The creation and destruction of the cosmic manifestation are under the superior guidance of God. Thus the battle of Kurukshetra was fought according to the plan of God. Arjuna was refusing to fight, but he was told that he should fight in accordance with the desire of the Supreme Lord. Then he would be happy. If one is in full Krishna consciousness, and his life is devoted to the Lord's transcendental service, he is perfect. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutalaya Shumate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sada Swarte Hei Vei Gaudha Vani Pacharini Vishesha Shunya Vari Paschal Shade Satarana Om Mangyan Timuram Dasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chatsuru Militam Jaini Tasmai Sri Garamei Namana Anjipalpa Kishishtra Vipas Devacha Titanam Bhavane Vyo Vaishnavi Vyo Namo Namaha. tasmat tanutishta yashurabhasva jitva shatrun bhukshva rajyam simittam mayai vaite hita purvamrva nimittamatram bhavasambhya sanchin. Therefore, get up, prepare to fight and win glory, conquer your enemies, and enjoy a flourishing kingdom. They are already put to death by my arrangement, and you, O Savyasachi, can but be an instrument in the fight. So Arjuna has seen this universal form of Krishna, and then he's seen this form manifest a somewhat ferocious and gruesome aspect. In that universal form of Krishna, he sees this multi-headed, multi-armed form of the Lord devouring all the soldiers in the battlefield. So fast forward now, he sees the future. He's terrified. He says, "Who are you and what is your mission?" So lastly, he answered, "My name is Kala. I call him his time." Or you can say, destruction, death. "And I have come to engage everyone." And he's announced that now, here, except for you, your brothers, the Pandavas, everybody in this battlefield will be destroyed. And then he speaks today's verse, "Therefore, get up. Fight this battle, win glory, conquer your enemies, enjoy a flourishing kingdom." They're already dead. My arrangement is, as we say now, it's a done deed. There are, now you just be my instrument, mitra matram. Be simply an instrument. So here, Arjuna, you remember the beginning of this battle, he is faced with a kind of what seems like a moral dilemma. Shall I fight and kill these people or not? And Krishna says, that's not your issue. They're going to die. That's my determination. They're already killed by me. You're wondering whether you're going to kill them. I've done it. Now you just be my instrument. You may recall that in an earlier chapter, in the fourth chapter, Krishna has given his general mission statement. When he descends to earth, what does he do? He says he comes from time to time. Regular periodic occasions. Why does he descend? Well, to help fulfill his plan. As Prabhupada points out here, there is a plan. The whole creation has a plan. And the plan is to make arrangements that condition souls who have lost their way and have strayed away from devotional service to God if I have some freedom. I don't want to be God's devotee, yet I'm created that way. That's my nature. Every living entity is constituted as servant. But somehow or other I get the idea that I'd like to try to be the master. Well, Krishna says, you can't be the supreme. That position is taken. But what I can do, because I want to exercise your freedom, here's the material world. You can forget those needs who stands in the way of your ambitions. And here you can try to start your own little God project, see how you work. You can have the illusion that you're not under my control. Because to be the servant means to be under the control of a superior. It means you follow the dictations of a superior. To be a devotee means we willingly do this. Yes, Krishna, Kinkaram, I am your servant. I am your servant. Tell me what to do. That's being under the control of Krishna. Or if I don't want to be, then I come into the material world and I think, hey, I'm big deal, there's no God, nobody can tell me what to do. But then I'm controlled by the material energy. And that, in that case, I also surrender to Krishna. That's called death. The devotees meet Krishna as Radha Shara Bihari, as a wonderful Supreme Lord. But to the non-devotees, he's dead. Or just like when Hiranyakashipu, who's an exemplary atheist, was engaged in severe child abuse of his devotee son, Prahlad. Finally, Nrisimhadeva appeared. To Prahlad, it was ecstasy. Here's the Supreme Lord. To Nrisimhadeva, here's death. So it's same Lord, but saw him differently. This is the different manifestation. So Krishna's plan is that here you can come to this world, you can carry on this charade. We can carry on this charade of trying to lord it over material nature. But it's so arranged in such a way that without interfering with our free will, Krishna does everything to bring us back to him. That's the plan. And therefore, in order to do that, he descends himself to the world to foster his plan. Again and again, whenever there's a rise of irreligion and a decline of religion, dharma and adharma. And so dharma means that when dharma or religion, religious principles are prevailing, then in human life, then it's favorable for people to not to take birth again in this material world, but to go back to Godhead. Human life is this opportunity. If we actually fulfill our human potential, we should not have to die again. If we have a human body, but still we simply use it for basically no better than animals, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, but in our high-tech way, then we, it's our dharma, and we don't go back to Godhead. So these things are inversely proportional. When dharma is up, our dharma is down. When our dharma, your religion goes up, religion goes down. And it's also characterized by a population shift. There's the sadhus, the pious, and the duskritina, the miscreants. When there's adharma, irreligion, that means that those who are irreligious people are either very numerous or in power. And they arrange things to make it difficult for a spiritual life. When the sadhus are prominent, and then dharma is naturally prominent. So Krishna explains when there's a rise of irreligion and a decline of religion, of dharma, then he descends. And he protects the sadhus and destroys the duskritina, the miscreants. He interferes with the natural course of things so that the path of religion becomes restored. Because dharma tu shakshat bhagavat panitam is stated that what is dharma is actually given by God. None of us have the authority to make up a religion. Only God does. He descends or sends his agent to proclaim the religion. And sometimes there's some relativity in this matter because people are different, times are different, circumstances are different. But he comes and at least he reveals as much as people are able to absorb according to time and circumstance. So at least some progress can be there. So for this reason, he descends and tries to redress the balance. So this is his mission, the general mission statement. So specifically, at this time, when the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, Krishna had descended, and at that time, the Adharma was particularly represented by demonic kings, godless government. And the sign of their godlessness is they had huge armies. One sign of a godless government is unnecessary defense spending when it becomes a major activity. And this becomes a big burden for everybody. And when you have these big armies, naturally they have to fight. Anyway, this is Kamsa. And he had many allies also. So Krishna's career was, you may know the story, that after spending his youth hidden away among country folk, a simple cowherd village, finally when he came of age, he went into action. He killed Kamsa and then began to fight. He was a prince, a kshatriya, so his job was to fight on behalf of Dharma. Krishna was acting like that way as a historical person. So then he, Jarasandha and Shalava, and all these other allies of Kamsa, one after another, he engaged them in fighting and killed them, one after another. Then the cleanup job was at this battle of Kurukshetra. This was Krishna's arrangement. Now he wanted the Pandavas to prevail. They were godly. And in the civil war, the Kauravas, the sons of Dhritarashtra, they were not very godly people. And so, by Krishna's arrangement, there was this battle of Kurukshetra. So here he's going to finish off his mission. He's going to gather all the demonic people together, one place, finish it off. And his job is done, as far as this part goes. So, this is his arrangement that this battle is taking place. A big battle like that take place, of course. He's there personally. I let them all take one place, and just finish them off. My job is done. And then Arjuna says, well, I don't know if this is right. You know, should I really do this? His scruples. So he shows him, see, this is, I'm doing it. Don't you worry about it. This is my desire that this happen. I should mention, by the way, this is a unique this battle, because Krishna was present. Actually, everyone who died on that battlefield achieved liberation. Those who were favorable to Krishna, who were devotees, they became went to Vaikuntha Loka. But those who were inimical to Krishna, they at least attained liberation into Brahma Jyoti. They didn't want a relationship with God, but still they got the impersonal liberation, Brahma Jyoti. So it is not that when Krishna or the Lord comes and engages in a fight, he has, in one sense, sounds like friends and enemies, because he's protecting the devotees and he's killing me or destroying the ungodly. But in another sense, Krishna is quite neutral. And whether it looks like he has friends and enemies, whatever he does is all good. So everyone is liberated. They actually receive pretty much the same treatment. So if you come into contact with God in any way, it's good for you. Srila Prabhupada, when he marked in a lecture, he said, if you have to hate, no, we're not recommending that people hate, but if you have to hate, then hate Krishna. Because if you become a big enough demon, Krishna will come and kill you and you'll be liberated. So Krishna is all good. He's not, ultimately, he's not partial. He acts toward everybody in the best possible way. So this was his mission at that time. So now the other question arises in this matter. Why is it that if Krishna is all powerful, why does he tell Arjuna to fight? Well, it's true, he doesn't need his help. In fact, in order to kill all the demons, Krishna doesn't even have to show up on the scene. He controls material nature. Everything, he can just, all the demons, they can all of a sudden have a little blood vessel pop in their brain and it's done. No problem. He doesn't need anyone's help, neither does he need really personally to come. So there are other reasons also, although that's his mission when he comes. There are other reasons he comes. One is to encourage and enliven the devotees, and to show himself to the world. Otherwise, we would not have much of an idea about how great the Lord is, unless he showed up and acted more or less on a human scale. Then we can see what he is like. So he comes actually for more than that reason. And he engages his devotees. Krishna is very kind to his devotees, and he would like to see his devotees get the credit for whatever is accomplished. Actually, he's done it. But he says, you be my instrument. So you can see this is his relationship with the devotees. That now you just do something. It's not that we sit around and do nothing. No, you want to do something, so engage in this way and I'll make it happen. You will be victorious. It's mentioned here that Arjuna is a very skilled bowman. It is the name that Krishna uses here, Savyasachi. It means one who can shoot a bow with the left hand as well as the right, literally. Savya means left. So Arjuna was that way, this hand and this hand, you know, he could do both. That was his skill with the bow. He was ambidextrous. So already he was very skillful. But of course it takes more than skill. It takes what in Sanskrit is called daiva, which people sometimes translate as luck or good fortune. But the actual meaning of daiva is the unseen hand of the Supreme. So it is Krishna who assures the outcome. Everybody knows you can be all prepared for an event, you can be well trained, you can be ready, you can have everything in place, you can have all your ducks lined up, as we say, everything can be there, and you'll still fail. Because things happen. And sometimes you can just be blundering around like crazy with nothing together and it comes out successful. This is the daiva factor, the unseen hand of the Supreme. Devotees recognize that Krishna is controlling everything. And he does have a plan. When he comes, he's doing something, he's executing his mission, making some effort to bring everyone, as many as possible, back to Godhead. Now, at this time, here in the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we are similarly working under the mission of Krishna. We are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who appeared only 500 years ago. That's actually very recent as time goes. And he is given a mission also. This is now a different time from when Krishna appeared. Circumstances are different. And the general mission is there that he's going to protect the sadhus and vanquish the miscreants. But there was an incident in Chaitanya when he came. Of course, Chaitanya does not appear. The Lord does not appear now. As a warrior, nor even as himself, as the Lord, but he comes in the guise of a devotee. Chaitanya is Krishna in a covered form, is taking the role of his own devotee. And showing how to practice devotional service. His weapon is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. That's his main weapon. Not a sword or a bow and arrow or anything like that. But it's the Hare Krishna Mantra. One time, Lord Chaitanya, there's a story that Lord Chaitanya did manifest a weapon. This was when his associate, Nityananda, who's the incarnation of Balaram, was preaching to these two fallen souls, Jagai and Madhai. They were Brahmins, but they had become quite corrupt, and they had become drunkards, sitting in the tavern all day, drinking. I don't know what they drank, palm toddy or something, whatever the local beverage was, and smashing the pots, whenever they came to play pots in those days. So when Nityananda tried to approach them, to reason with them, to get to accept devotional service, they chased them away by throwing potsherds at them, the chipped pieces of pot. And one actually struck Nityananda, was bleeding, which is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw that Nityananda had been injured. He became so upset. And in a furious mood, he came to Jagai Madhai. And in an angry mood, people could see that he had the forearm form of Vishnu. And he had a Sudarshana chakra, the personal weapon of Vishnu, this chakra, a discus, chopping off heads and things like that, and was about to kill them. And Nityananda intervened and begged the Lord to spare their lives, and said that, truly they're miscreants, but you come in this age to save people. But if you simply kill the sinful, there will be nobody left to save. Because in this age, everyone is a mystery. It's so overwhelmingly bad that you won't be able to divide the sheep from the goats, as they say. Oh, goat, no sheep. It's like that. Because even though one may be an innocent person, perhaps, in many ways, well-intentioned, simply because of bad association, simply because of Fox TV, simply because they watch, whatever it may be, people become contaminated. MTV, name your favorite, We don't even talk about the World Wide Web. So this is what happens to people. They become rotten simply by a bad association. There's no chance to be innocent anymore. The age of innocence is over. So Krishna, at this point, he can't do this killing thing. But the idea of his weapon is that while it doesn't kill the person, it does destroy the demonic mentality. It's described that we have in our hearts a kind of a solidified complex of material desires, who's like a little Hiranyakashipu in the heart. And so in this way, with the Maha Mantra, that destroys that Hiranyakashipu in the heart. And this is the mission of Lord Chaitanya. So we have to execute his mission. Lord Chaitanya, again, he could save everybody for himself, but he wants to give his devotees the engagement. He wants to let them do service. It's just like in Vrindavan, Krishna doesn't need a father and mother to take care of him. But he has a father and mother. Because he wants to give that service to the devotees so that they can enjoy serving him in this way. So he delegates his mission to his devotees to do this. And if we make a commitment, yes, Krishna, I want to serve you in this way, then Krishna gives us the power to do it. We don't have to worry. The future of this is not in our hands. It's in Krishna's hands. Prabhupada, when we look at, for example, what Srila Prabhupada did, Krishna so arranged it that it became obvious, because when Srila Prabhupada came to Lord Chaitanya's mission, because Lord Chaitanya had actually stated in Chaitanya Bhagavad that one day the names of Krishna would be chanted in every town and village of the world. It was very clear that Lord Chaitanya expected that the chanting of Hare Krishna would be all over the world. He didn't just have the idea that it would be something that would go on in Bengal or even India, but go everywhere. This is actually his desire. And so Prabhupada took it up. This is what I'll do. I just committed himself. Somehow or other, I will take up this order from Chaitanya, passed down by his spiritual master, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, before him. But you when you look at how Prabhupada started out when he came to America in 1965, he arrived here. What were his assets? Well, he was 70 years old. I'm over 55 now, and I'm slowing down. But at 70, people are ready to really throw in the towel. But Prabhupada, at that age, he left India. First time he had been outside of India. No, not knowing hardly anything what the future would be. He didn't have any money. The Indian government only let you take 40 rupees out. There was currency restrictions. He didn't have any money. And he was not in good health. Actually, on the ship over, he had a heart attack. He was not in good health. And he had no institutional backing or support. The Gaudiya Matha, the mission of Bhakti Siddhanta at that time, had fallen into disarray, and although many, many people had gotten the order from Bhakti Siddhanta Prabhupada, spiritual master, to preach in the West, for whatever reason nobody was doing it. So Prabhupada just went on his own and didn't get much, didn't get help. So he was quite all alone. No capital, no youthful energy, no good health, no institutional support. So his resources here, and then he went to New York and he was all by himself, living from hand to mouth, from door to door practically, just barely out on the streets. And yet, in a few years, the whole world had heard the Hare Krishna mantra. It was famous. Number one hit song in Europe, England, within a few years. And Prabhupada managed to start this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. He even started, he went made one trip to Russia and made one devotee there. And pretty soon, you know, it was a big underground religious movement in Russia. I heard one recently, there's a Russian Orthodox priest who is against the devotees. The Orthodox Church thinks that Russia belongs to them, and they don't like the fact that ISKCON devotees are in Russia. And so he makes attacks on us. His name is Dworkin, and he's a professor of sectology at an Orthodox seminary. But anyway, I heard him talk, and he said, you know, it's not possible that Prabhupada could have come to Russia for just this one visit and made so many devotees. And so the KGB watched everybody. How was he able to become so successful? So he suggested, and then he said, we will not know the answer until all the KGB files are open. In other words, he was suggesting that the KGB would help the Srila Prabhupada. Because it did look quite miraculous. I don't think it was the KGB. Meanwhile, you know, there was a rumor spread by the communists in India. But our movement was spreading very much all over India also, that his son was actually the CIA. Prabhupada used to make fun, oh, the CIA is dancing and chanting. He really used to think like, so both KGB and CIA. But actually, it was just Krishna.
Krishna.
Krishna. So anyway, Prabhupada was able to do all these things because of Krishna. Again, you just be my instrument, and don't worry about the result. That's my business. So here the same message is given by Krishna to Arjuna. You just be my instrument, nimitta matra. You don't have to worry. No big burden, no big anxiety. Even though it's the middle of a battle, if you understand that Krishna's working, that you're his instrument, whatever happens that's in Krishna's hands, it's for the best. He may give me victory, he may give me defeat, that's his business, not my business, I'm just his servant. And so the devotee remains carefree, even in the midst of all kinds of difficulties and troubles for most people. So this is what's happening here on this battlefield, and how this has been now revealed very dramatically to Arjuna. Any questions, comments? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.